asked the governor's office for funds to get us up to this point in time, also to make up the difference that we needed.
Okay, Representative Parnell and Grusendorf.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to return to the topic that Representative Terrio and Representative Martin were speaking of, just to ask Representative Ulmer through the chair for some clarification. Has the award of attorney's fees been reduced to a judgment?
It is my, if I might, Mr. Chair, it is my understanding from a brief conversation with the attorney who represented the Southeast Conference portion of it that that is true, and that all attorney's fees were awarded with the exception of expert witness fees. With that exception, apparently there really isn't anything to argue about, but I have asked that all of the plaintiffs submit in writing what it is that they say their costs were. And As I said, that information was sort of hurriedly put together this morning when I realized what bill was on the floor, because I thought this is an opportunity for us to pay our debt as opposed to allowing interest to continue to accumulate.
Is your intent then, if you're going to propose a bill or an amendment, whichever, is your intent then to just include the attorney's fees that have been reduced to judgment?
Yes.
Okay. Nothing beyond that.
That is my feeling, that that is what this committee would feel most comfortable with.
Okay, thank you.
I don't believe Mr. Harris knows, but do we have anyone in the audience who might know? In the supplemental bill that's supposed to be coming down here shortly, does anyone know if there's a request in there to pay the municipalities? If you would, please. Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reapportionment board is actually separate from the Division of Election and has their own budget, right?
That's correct.
Was there any monies that moved from the Division of Elections to the reapportionment board?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
I was originally going to ask about a contract with, I guess it was DNR for cartographers or something, but I guess I'd have to save that for the reapportionment board. But you're saying that the Division of Elections is separate from the reapportionment board, so I know, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question.
Okay, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a memo in our packet that an OMB analyst, Cynthia Halterman, wrote to Mr. Stastny last June, reflecting on the request at that time and pointing out that reductions could be made by using our in-house media. And I was just wondering if Mr. Harris could tell us, of the actual year-to-date expenditures, how much of this is a reflection of media costs. I recall seeing the Lieutenant Governor on TV in Anchorage talking about the closed primary issue. Was that television time purchased by the state? And could you break out for us, within these year-to-date expenditures, how much has been spent on media and advertising?
I don't have those numbers. Charlotte Fixon is here. She may be able to address that. I can't. I don't know.
If I could ask another one, Mr. Chairman. When Ms. Sexton was here, I asked about an increase in salary for the election workers, and I'm still not exactly clear what the rationale was for raising salaries that weren't budgeted, and I'd like to know how much of the overrun results from those salary increases and why we think that somebody working at a range C versus a range A in the why this would be justified under the circumstances, particularly considering the severe overrun that has occurred.
I understand that question from the other day, and I don't have the answer this time. We can generate the answer for you on that, but I don't have it now.
Further questions?
Well, just one more. With respect to this Department of Administration chargeback, it's not, is it that this money being requested is what has already been spent? Is there anything budgeted for the time that would be required through the balance of the year?
There of course, was the appropriations for contractual services. The division had encumbered $210,000 of administration's charges, but after the election, as I stated before, when we looked at the cost of election workers coming in and the remaining funds that the division had, we had to unencumber those funds so that we would have enough money to carry the division, and that we asked for a reallocation from OMB for all of those funds into the various line items so they would have enough money to carry through until approximately the 15th of February. The reduced operating staff and time for the division. And so that was a normal amount, was $210,000 that would have that was in the original appropriation that would have been paid over to to administration. And then we had a additional billing of $82,000 above the $210,000 from administration for extra work related to elections.
So this entire amount is for services already incurred, and is there more money budgeted here for any work that will occur between now and the end of the fiscal year?
No, the total amount budgeted is to for the 210 and 82, 292,000, I believe, is the amount. Although Mike Nazik would like a better answer than for myself.
Sure, we will ask Mike to.
Thank you for the record. My name is Mike Nazik. I'm the administrative director for the governor's office. Just to respond to your question. There was a total right now with the Department of Administration. We have three separate RSAs for various types of work. It totals $284,000. Right now, in our hand, unpaid bills total $214,000. We asked the Department of Administration prior to the preparation of this supplemental request to give us a ballpark estimate on what their estimates would be for the balance of the fiscal year to provide continued support as well as billings that we had not received to date. The original allocation, however, for the governor's office that was within the elections budget totaled $242,000. Historically, the Department of Administration chargeback allocation, we've always exceeded the allocation from the Department of Administration on an on-election year. Additional monies would come out of their operating budget to cover the overage. So as we sit here right now, $214,000 we have in our hand to pay, and we estimated a total of $310,000 that we would need for the balance, or for the whole year, the portion we have not yet paid, plus our projected costs.
Thank you. That clears that up. I have another question on another subject, if I might.
Please, but we'll ask Mike to stick around there. There's probably going to be additional questions. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The temporary hires, temporary employees used in this election is much higher, double the number historically used. What is the rationale for that? Why was that done?
I'd like to ask Charlotte Fixon to come up and answer that question.
Okay. Right. Can we help Charlotte bring up a chair, please?
For the record, I'm Charlotte Fixon, Director of the Division of Elections. And your question was why we had double the amount of temporaries. When you're condensing 6 months of work into 2 months, that creates a situation where you have to have more people, more bodies to actually do the work and do the input. And it was a very unusual time for us, and that is the main reason why we ended up with more temporaries.
Any follow-ups, Representative Brown?
And which months are you referring to? Are you you're talking about what happened because of the redrawing of the lines, or?
Yes. Excuse me. Go ahead. Yes, the redrawing of the lines with the reapportionment and even what happened with the primary, because waiting for reapportionment created a situation where we got into doing our regular work on the primary and on the election, but that was all impacted by the reapportionment situation. So. The main heavy months were after the decision had come down, so July through probably September, the heaviest time.
Since I didn't realize Ms. Fixton was here, but do you know the answer about the media and how much of this expenditure of the year to date was for media and advertising?
I don't know exactly on the media. I know the contract that you were referring to as far as the lieutenant governor going on the television and doing the information on the primary. That was through the Bradley people, and I think it was around $30,000 for all of the spots. They made the spots. There was just one spot. They made it, and then they circulated it, and they acted as a broker to make sure that every part of the state would be able to have that available for education.
Okay, Representative Hammack.
Thanks. While you're here, I've got the sheet that shows the overall request for the supplemental. I was wondering, the personal services line, which is the people necessary to run the elections, I want to make sure, is that 356.2? It says it's through the end of the fiscal year. And I guess my question is, number one, we've got the March 2nd elections, which we just appropriated, at least out of the House, $90,000 to cover those. I know there's an April election in Anchorage. Are there any other elections going on? What's the schedule of elections from now till the end of the year, I guess, number one?
I think
the Matanuska, this is Carol Thompson in the Region 2 office. The Matanuska, this is in a borough, more than likely be having a special election in April of this year as well.
That was the one I was going to add for you.
Okay. If I might continue, Mr. Please. Chairman. Is this 356,000 then the amount necessary to input the 14,000 names in Fairbanks and the 25,000 in Anchorage, or and get those ready so they're in time for that?
No, and I'm glad you asked that question, because when Representative Larson was talking about his number two option about defining what a skeleton crew might be to get by, you know, temporarily. That is exactly what this supplement has for personal services. It only has us bringing up our permanent employees to the 37.5 week from the 30 hours. It is just permanent employees, and there are two temporaries added in there. We try to cut it to the bone. In my way of feeling, it was certainly an overkill. I am not happy about it in the least. I feel that there's no way that we can bring all of our work up with two temporaries and a regular staff, even with the extra day back in the schedule. So I guess it is what we were willing to limp along and try to work with.
Mr. Chairman, so yeah, and that's my concern, I guess. So what you're saying, this $350,000 will just get us through the two April. This is the cost of two April elections, or?
Mr. Nizek?
The 356.2 represents restoring the 18 permanent full-time staff that are currently on 30-hour work week back to full-time, 37.5-hour work week, and that's effective as of March 1. It also restores two permanent part-time positions as well as two temporary positions to assist with the REA process.
When you say restore them back to full-time, do you mean the difference from 0 to 37.5 hours a week, or from 30 to 37.5 hours?
Basically from 0, because we're looking at the division running out of money as early as the third week of February. When these estimates were done, we thought that we would have sufficient funding in the budget to get them to the end of February, but right now it's looking like it's going to be maybe a week shy of getting us to the 1st of March. So these figures represent from March 1 to June 30th on what the division needs to restore to full operation and pay for the personal services costs involved.
Can I continue? Please. So I guess my question, well, if that line is implemented, can you run the April elections? Or are you going to need more?
Well, the problem we're going to have in the municipality of Anchorage is just what Carol Thompson told you a little bit earlier. When you have so many thousand people to put in, that means that your registers are not going to be up to date. And there will be, at one end of the process, you're going to have to deal with it. And if it is a question ballot because they weren't on that register, then you're going to take time and it's going to impact one way or the other. We do not have the money in this, what we're asking for, to bring us completely up to date by April. If we were to do that with a 26,000+ just in the Anchorage area alone, then you're talking about probably putting on maybe 10 temporaries immediately and trying to work them only no overtime, and trying to get 100 to 125 input each day from each person and getting them done in hopefully a month. And when you're talking about 5-day weeks, you're really talking about 6-7 weeks. And so that's what I see.
Okay, let me see if I understand now. This 356 then will pay the, as mentioned, the 18 permanent full-time, 2 permanent part-time, and 2 temporary positions for the remainder of the fiscal year, with 3 permanent full-time positions remaining vacant. And I guess my question has to do with, what about the election workers and so forth? Where is that covered in the request, the money to pay them?
Is this part?
The election worker payments for the REA election specifically are within the $90,000.
But I assume that if you have an election in Anchorage and have an election in Mattsu and elsewhere, you're going to have election workers there.
Okay, well, the way that works is that the Division of Election has the registrar capability, and so we support and the election. So we do not have to pay the election workers for the municipalities. And that's why that's not in there. Only the REAs.
The municipalities would cover the advertising costs and so forth.
The only thing that we're obligated to do in that sense is to supply the registers and to back them up as far as their needs on question ballots, on verifying voters.
So, further questions? Representative Terrio?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Thixton, the $125,000 here for the Waco Flansburgh. Just trying to remember the comment that you made the other day. Is that full amount still owed, or a portion has been billed and only a portion is still owed?
Of the $125,000, that there, I think maybe $9,000 has been billed. Nothing has been paid.
Any further questions? Representative Brown?
Thank you. What would be the cost of hiring 10 temporaries for 6 weeks in order to bring the voter registration rolls current before the April elections?
I don't have that right in front of me. I'd have to do a calculation before you get back to it.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, what is the effect on those voters who aren't brought current if that is not funded? Does that mean they would vote a question ballot, that they would show up, but their name would not be there?
That's correct. That would be the only alternative they would have if they're not on the register.
Mr. Chairman, this just reminds me that, you know, we're inputting this data several different times. Say if you did have a new person that moved here, they have to get re-input by the Division of Motor Vehicles so they can get a driver's license. They have to get input again by the permanent fund dividend. Now they're, you know, we're having to, you'd see the overhead created by doing this. I just would like to see us have a common system so we could just input that data one time.
Sounds like a conversation we had before. Any other questions? Thank you, folks. Do we have anyone else who wishes to be heard today?
I do have my supervisor from Region 1 is here in the room, and I was thinking that she might like to talk to you just briefly about the impact in Southeast.
She has the floor.
Okay, thank you. I'm Louise Halliter, and I'm the regional supervisor for Region 1 Division of Elections. And I guess the comments that I've got is that for Region 1, our work with reapportionment actually began in October of 1991 because of our access to the director's office and the census block maps that were available here in Juneau. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with those, but those district maps would easily cover the entire floor for just one district. And we worked on those maps, retrieving census block figures that would be used later for the district and the reprecincting that we had to do. And we worked on that until the first of the year, my administrative assistant and myself, and that consumed 90 to 95% of our time. And there were many times that we spent hours there at the office until 10 to 3, 11 at night, and even on weekends we were back there. Then after the first of the year, when we began the precincting project and then the legal descriptions, which entailed a lot of time as well as trying to prepare for the 92 primary in general, I know that you've heard a lot about the money that was spent, and I just want you to know for the record that there were many ways that we did try to cut costs. In our Region 1 office, when our election board training that we're mandated to do in an election year, we took advantage of the 2-for-1 Marcare sales that the airlines had to travel to do our training. We cut our training down. Instead of chartering flights, We took advantage of scheduled flights, which saved us thousands of dollars. Also, we were able to utilize the prisoner work team here in Juneau with the correctional facility, which saved us over $3,000 for the setup of the polling place equipment. They did that as a community service for us. I also worked with a group which is called SAGA, which is mainly young people from 18 to 22 years old. We had several SAGA volunteers who helped work the election boards at no cost to us. Their services were all volunteer. Some of the costs that we did incur that were unexpected because of the primary being set back the day before the primary, which is your date to set up election equipment, was a holiday. So most of the cities who usually would do this with no charge to us, suddenly we are faced with having to pay holiday pay that their employees would normally receive. Another thing that we faced this year was our absentee voting officials in many communities who are the city clerks and who normally do this as a part of their job at no charge to us. They were so busy with their own elections that they did not have the time, and we were forced to hire absentee voting officials in several communities where we've never had to do this before. There were a lot of costs because of ballots coming in late, because of the primary ballot, the party thing that was held in court. The ballots coming in, we had to goal streak or express just as quickly as we could where we would normally use the regular mail service. But it was a very trying year for everyone, and we worked very, very hard. My staff was great, as I'm sure the staff in all the other offices were, and I can assure you that there was no one, there was never any intent of trying to abuse or use people that we really didn't need.
Any questions, Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it the responsibility of the Division of Elections to provide maps of districts?
Yes, yes, we do. Traditionally, they have had a map. In the 1980 census, they provided a statewide map. This year, we had so many cases where we were requested, they requested district maps, and what we did was make individual maps that we eventually put into the official election pamphlet and made those available to candidates. It wasn't ideal, but it was the best we could do with very little money.
My experience in dealing with those maps is that they were, particularly in the urban area, almost unreadable when you were trying to determine exactly where the line was. And I made several attempts to borrow the large map for the purpose of having it copied and was denied that opportunity from the Anchorage office on the grounds that they only had one copy and they didn't want to let it out. Is it a statutory requirement that you provide a readable map so that a candidate or a person who might want to become a candidate could determine what district they live in? Is that specified in the statute that that's your responsibility? And that's one question I have.
Okay. I don't know where it says that specifically. I think what we have to have available is a map on a wall someplace where you can go and find your area so that we can tell you which precinct you're in and which district you're in. We did provide the bigger maps. Maybe it wasn't in the very beginning. We had Ridgeway doing them for $4, I believe, and then they were available to the public. It is not, it wasn't done perfectly. We we knew this was an interim plan, and so we tried not to spend money on interim maps that were not going to be around except for this one election. So that was just a conscious decision to try and get by with what we could.
And if I could continue for a moment, what has become of the new geographic information system that was purchased specifically for the purpose of this reapportionment and making maps for this reapportionment? Who physically now has possession of that equipment and capability?
It is in our office and ready to be used as soon as we have a plan.
You physically have it now?
Yes, we do.
Do you have other data residing on it? Do you have the census data on it now?
Yes, we have the ArcInfo census data as of what was available for the interim plan.
And do you have a person or people that are capable of running that, or how are you operationally running it?
We do not, at this time, we do not have the personnel, and we don't have the licensing fee paid. As soon as we are ready to start the next phase of the reapportionment at that time, and we're thinking that it probably wouldn't go through Department of Justice or litigation until the new fiscal year, at that time we will go ahead and apply for the licensing, and the person who did our mapping in our office before is available in July.
Does that mean that the capabilities of the system are not available at this time to the reapportionment board as it refines the existing reapportionment plan?
They use the Labor Department, SunSpark, and the SunSpark that was used by reapportionment, that they paid for the SunSpark, and that equipment resides in Labor, and they have consistently used that. They've also used the DNR people for the electrostatic copies of the maps that they have created. Our maps are, we do not have electrostatic. We only have the pin plotters that are used primarily. We made the maps for our supervisors to be able to go through and check their boundaries and do their legal descriptions. And it was an in-house thing that was very helpful. We also have a lot of other capabilities that our equipment would be able to use for, and one of them might be even getting off the mainframe and being able to run VRIMS, our voter registration and election management system, on a PC type RISC 6000 instead of paying mainframe time, which is very expensive now.
This is a revelation to me that both elections and labor have now got separate systems. I was under the impression it was one system shifting back and forth.
No,
but you've got two separate software licenses, two separate data sets that you're attempting to maintain separately. What is the why did you pick that organizational arrangement?
We did not pick the organizational arrangement. What we were trying to do was to be able to fulfill our need to work with our supervisors and be able to use the ArcInfo in-house to make the maps that we needed.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hoffman.
Ms. Dixon, how many fiscal officers have you had working for you in the last 24 months? What's your turnover rate?
I think I've had the first one we had for 1 year. Judy Jordan was with us. Excuse me, not 1 year. It was about 10 months. After Judy Jordan, we have had several that have not been there more than maybe 6 months.
Is it fair to say that you've had six fiscal officers in the last 24 months?
No, I would say I think four.
Well, that still seems to be high, and I wonder if you could double-check that, but it seems to me that during a time when we have reapportionment and the management of those dollars, that are given to you to carry out a critical function of elections. It seems to me that, and I don't have the privilege of the audit, but it seems to me that just by looking at what has transpired, there could have been a lot better management of the funds and management of the total program. I guess I, for one, would like to go ahead and correct the problems and pay for them, but we need to be as frugal as possible and still get the job done, you know. And I think that we as the legislature need to make some recommendations in this area when the audit does come out, because we are the ones that are affected. You know, we have elections that are as close as 20 and 30 votes, and that is critical, and we're depending upon this office to manage the program or implement the program so that that we get the one man one vote and get the people that people elected that are duly noted. And if people like in Anchorage, if they don't get all of the the people transferred into the system, it's just going to cause more delays and more frustrations and potentially more lawsuits. So I guess I would like to short fund this budget and look at what the audit says and take some action.
Let me try to summarize where I think we are at this point, and maybe Mr. Nizek will be able to help us, and Mr. Harris too. But what I hear the committee saying, first of all, we have to identify the programs, services, so forth, what was to be done under the money that was funded for fiscal year 93. Because we are now in a situation that what was to be done cannot be done because the money had to be diverted for other purposes. So I guess the committee is asking for some type of information as to what were dollars deviated to. We know the reapportionment, we know the mapping, we know the Department of Law. But we don't know how much. For example, last year in the supplemental budget, there was $424,000 that was appropriated to the Division of Elections for the express purpose of redrawing reapportionment maps. So I think we need some accounting, you know, of those dollars too and what they were used for. Really, this is what the legislature was asking for in an audit. So I feel if we get that information, maybe we don't have to wait 10 days or an extra 30 days for something else to take action. So those are the types of numbers we need. But lacking those, I agree with Representative Hoffman. Maybe we're going to have to do some temporary or short funding for a period of time until that information becomes available. And I'm going to suggest at this time that we kind of leave things open to those two options and call for another meeting on this subject at 1:30 on Friday so that we can also get some added information on the concerns expressed here in regards to the various municipalities and what they're owed according to the court orders. And between now and that time, I look forward to working with everyone to see if we can come up with those answers to provide the full information to the Finance Committee here so that whatever action we take, we have the information to be able to defend our position. Do we have any other questions or comments on this subject today? Representative Terrio.
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm a little bit reluctant to support dragging any other issue in that might complicate this, as was suggested with the legal fees. There's perhaps some dissension there on what's owed, and I guess it would be my preference that maybe we keep it.
We got two vehicles, and we can make that determination, Representative Terrio. The supplemental budget would be one vehicle that would be adequate for that, or else we could consider it here. I don't have any preference, other than I think it's something we have to address. Any other discussion? Ladies, we thank you very much for being with us again, and Mr. Harris and Mr. Nizek, and maybe sometime between now and Friday we can also sit down and figure out a game plan here to come up with or suggested alternatives on Friday. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
The other thing that I had on the agenda today is just a general discussion, if any members of the Finance Committee wish, in regards to the budget process, the subcommittee hearings, revenues, appropriations, expenditures, anything that anyone would want to bring up. I always kind of want this to be an open topic. I want everyone to feel free at any time if they have any concerns about how things are going, what revenue sources are, what information we are not getting, what information you need, how we can help. I want you to feel free to bring it up so that we can get that information to everyone in a timely manner. So any discussion? And none, we thank you all. Oh, Representative Brown.
I guess I would direct this question to the chair. What is the plan for the budget? Is there a plan, and are we going to see something in writing soon? We're about 1/4 of the way through the session. And a continuing concern I have is that we are not spending much time so far, at least as a group, on our long-range problem in relation to what would be an appropriate action or stance to assume this year. And I'm just interested in knowing what is the intention of the majority with respect to the budget.
I hear you say two plans. What is the position in regards to the budget this year, and what is regards of how it relates to the long term? Is that it?
Well, I'm primarily concerned about the one before us, but I think we should make our decisions with respect to the current budget with knowledge and reflection about what that holds for the long term.
Well, right now, as I envision the process to take place, is through the subcommittee hearings, we are able to get the information in which each of the agencies can present to their subcommittees what they feel is absolutely, in the term I always use, desirable. And once we hear that, we're going to have to sit down and determine what is practical under both the short-term and the long-term revenue sources for the state of Alaska. And once we can determine what is practical, we have to then figure out how we're going to pay for that. And does that mean further reductions in the budget, or does that mean some type of revenue enhancement measures, or what? And I hope that's the process that we all take part in the discussion of.
So do you see us resolving those issues of what's practical and how to pay for it before the subcommittees close out on the timeline, or how exactly is that going to occur?
I figure the practical process will probably take place somewhere between March 1st and 15th, when we have the subcommittees given their overviews before the full financial?
Can I continue? Do you intend to assign subcommittee caps?
All I can say at this time is that a process to do so is under discussion.
And what will be the process for resolving the overall level of expenditures, including the capital budget, debt service, and other things that the formulas, other things that you've broken apart from the agency operations?
Nothing's been formalized yet because I have concerns in the following manner. There are certain things in the governor's proposed budget that have increased beyond, quote, unquote, our control. It might be increased in student population. It might be increases in addition. We have to take all of those things into consideration. But as you notice that somewhere in between there are the various agency budgets, which many have also showed an increase. A few have a small decrease. And we kind of have to analyze, in my opinion, all of those in a whole so that we can determine how much bucks we're going to have once we set our revenues, which we hope to do so around March the 1st. And maybe we're going to have to ask some agencies to reduce their budget 5%, others not at all. But I'm still trying to go through that process, Representative Brown, and get a logical way in which to do that. Any other discussion? Representative Navarro.
I don't have a teleconference anymore. I just would like to have you make available to the minority any handouts that you have for the majority caucus, so that, and we'll try to do the same for you if we hand any out, so that we can try to all read off the same sheet of music. One of the problems that we've had in the past is people make up their own numbers, and it confuses everybody, legislators, the public, the press. Pretty soon we don't know what we're comparing to or with. So.
At this point, I'd be very happy to do that. You're gonna, why don't I just have someone bring them to your respective offices? Representative Brown?
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, another issue that I hope we will build into our thinking and our plan is how to address the school construction issues. And I realize those bills that the governor has put forward are not before us yet, but I would like us to consider, as we build the overall budget, what commitment we're going to make to that and how that fits in and how we can pay for that need that I feel many members feel this is a high priority.
And, to this point, I believe we have House Bill, is it 58 in committee now? That was the bill that was introduced by the Finance Committee that provided for fully funding under the present instructional unit formula, the foundation program. I forget the exact figures, but somewhere around $613 million. It calls for fully funding pupil transportation under the present formula of about $28 million. It provides fully funding for education debt service of the state's portion of the debt service. In other words, if it's 90% at 90%, if it's 70% at 70%, whatever the law was at the time in which the bonds were sold. So that we do have a bill now that's up into our committee that can give to local school districts at least the minimum of what they, what the legislature is saying that they will receive. And what that minimum would be is what they got last year plus the increase in the foundation program for increased enrollment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was specifically referring to the capital needs for construction and maintenance on facilities and how we're going to handle that, you know, in the governor's proposal that we should consider spending permanent fund earnings for that and recognizing the difficulties with an equitable allocation and accounting for everyone's needs. And, you know, it just seems like there's a lot of pressure building and real serious problems developing because the local governments are not able to fully address it. The state hasn't taken, you know, any action here since the new House Bill 37 came into place. I personally would like to see us try to resolve that, and I think there are a lot of issues there that we have to look at, and one of them is, can we afford to spend some extra amount on schools in relation to the rest of the budget, which is why I'm, you know, raising it now. How does this fit in? Do other people think this is a priority we should be working on? If not, you know, maybe I'll quit working on it because it's, but I think there's interest in it, and I'd like to see us try to work it into the budget to make that a priority.
I'm going to have to ask you to reserve some of that questions when Chairman McLean is here. He's having a discussion in regards to the capital budget on Monday, and maybe she could answer some of your questions there too. My concern is to tell the municipalities at this time that it is the legislative intent to fund the statutory amount for next year. Now, if we go beyond that for major maintenance and new school construction, then we have to look at the needs for the priority one schools, as suggested by the governor, the priority twos, and the on-house students. And I think that's going to be a whole separate discussion from paying the present bonding issues. So we got to take that discussion, but at this time I'm trying to separate them so that at least we tell the districts, you know, they can count on this.
How much underfunded is the governor's budget relative to your proposal or the House Finance Committee proposal for full funding of education programs?
Well, the only thing that the governor suggested under the present levels was a 10.5% underfunding for pupil transportation. We are intent to fully fund that also. Any other discussion? I think this is good. We got to do it more often, okay? Anything else to come before the committee today? Hearing none, then meeting's adjourned, but we will have a meeting at 1:30 on Friday.
Sorry. I'll be here. I'll be here Friday.